This is Icon Art Radio, and I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with Alan Cobb and Donna Colby, and we're broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa. Well, I had planned to say a few words about my art history course that I'm doing at Icon, but as we were preparing to get started here, some juicy talk came up, and I always like things to be like coming from the gut and really full of juice and energy. And yes. So I always like the timely, momentary topic to come up, which has happened today. We're gonna talk about time, the enemy of artists. So you had this got started because we were talking about the Gertrude Stein quote about Picasso. Can you remember what that is?
Yes, I may not have it verbatim, but it was a book. Gertrude Stein wrote a biography of Picasso in her Gertrude Stein-esque way. And one of the things that she said about him I thought was pretty amazing, because if you've studied Picasso, it makes complete sense. She said, Picasso was so prolific because he had to keep emptying himself. And she repeated it as Gertrude Stein had a way. She said, he emptied himself because he kept filling himself. So he emptied himself because he kept filling himself. And she said he, how did she word it? It was something like he filled himself up with life experience and perceptions so rapidly that the only way he could bear life, essentially, was to keep emptying himself through his creative work. And that makes total sense, because if you studied Picasso's life habits, he was not only a world-class pack rat in that he fell in love with pretty much every scrap of paper or matchbook or, you know, piece of junk that he came across and brought it home with him and kept it. And at the end of his life, he had like 7 dwellings filled with all of this stuff that he couldn't bear to part with because he actually loved it, found it beautiful. And the same thing with interactions with people and all of that and other kinds of subtler perceptions. He always wanted to do something with it. So his drawings and paintings are loaded with relationships, the relationship between the artist and his model and other things like that. So anyway, that was the Gertrude Stein quote. And it's a beautiful thing to me because I have found in my life this sense of having a bottleneck or a closed pressure valve or something when I've spent too much time gathering perceptions and gathering experience and didn't have enough to do with it. And it just sort of filled me up and created this like frustration almost. And so.
Well, then we got talking about how we as artists, and one of the dilemmas of artists is that they take in so much and they want to do something with all of it that there's just no time. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that artists have to deal with.
Yeah.
You either have to figure out how to do a little something with each thing, mm-hmm. like in the journal. I always suggest that you have a journal so you can get that thing down, at least in seed form, and get it even slightly manifest, mm-hmm. so you feel like you've dealt with it to some extent. Or you have to like take the projects one at a time and just not even think that there's no time to do them, and then spend a year manifesting one installation or one great painting or whatever. I think artists have to figure out somehow to deal with this, mm-hmm. to stay sane and functional.
And you can't stop if you do the one thing of where you choose one thing you're going to do for a year. You still can't stop all the thoughts from it. You were mentioning, Alan, before the show, how the thoughts just keep coming, all the ideas, and they're just, what do you do with? How do you sort them out? And how do you choose which ones to act on and which ones not to and so forth, if they're all good and all equally interesting?
And that sort of weird, tragic notion that everything that you start to do is being done at the expense of all the other things that you might have been doing instead.
And you mentioned that made you crazy as a kid.
Well, as a kid, and it was not just about time for me, it was about space as well. It was when I realized that I was in one place and there was all this other incredible stuff going on everywhere else in the world that I was missing out on. Mm-hmm. And it could be in my town even. You know, if I was home, I was missing out on what was going on in the playground or the movie theater or the park or whatever. But then as I got older and visited other countries, it would be the same kind of frustration where I felt like, I'm not in Paris right now. But there's this huge amount of stuff going on there right now that I could be experiencing if I were there. And if I was in Paris, I wouldn't be in Rome, or I wouldn't be in India or whatever. And there was something in my mental makeup that found it really hard to accept that. It was almost like I felt like there must be a way that I could be in all these places at one time and experience all these things.
Yeah, you just need to become God.
But you know, even from my little point of view of being a limited being, I have, as I've gotten older, been able to see that other person as myself enjoying it. So I'm almost getting the... I mean, it's really intimate. I think it just has to do with our expanding, growing, and aware in consciousness, where we identify more with each other.
Yeah.
Where I can really get the richness of me doing it by knowing that all these other aspects of myself are doing it.
That's actually true. Like when you're in a museum, you know, and seeing all these great artworks, the feeling is not kind of envy, like I wish I could have been each of these artists. It's just that, like you said, you feel like there's some aspect of you that resonates completely with Cézanne, and another aspect completely resonates with Van Gogh or whatever, and it's like gratitude to them that they've brought it out in these beautiful forms.
And it is that human intelligence, the one human intelligence went there, and then it went there, and it went there. And the more you identify with that one intelligence, then you that part of you, as you're standing there, is enlivened, and you identify with him, that person. And then you also, as the individual that you still are functioning in this time and space, go back to your studio, and Cézanne or Renoir or Mary Cassatt or whoever are more living. Mm-hmm. Again, they're living, that intelligence that went there has looped around again and is doing it again through you. It's really cool.
Well, and teaching art classes too, I find so incredibly satisfying, because I'll give an assignment to the group, and maybe I have like 5 or 6 people doing the same exact assignment, and every single expression has a different flavor, the individual flavor of that person who's producing it through that nervous system, those hands, and they're all different from what I would have produced if I was, and yet I feel, being the person who's like circling around the table looking at all these things, it's just as satisfying as if I were producing all of those things myself. I feel like a midwife, but that's not even the right analogy even, because it's something bigger than that's happening with getting such delight out of all of these avenues of expression.
When I went to jazz clubs in New York in my youth, a lot, much of the time I had the feeling I should have brought my trumpet. I should be up there with them. I should be playing with them. I can do that. I have to be part of that. I have to help make that happen. And eventually I got to the point where I'm really glad that somebody's doing it. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad that they're putting the extra attention into it that I couldn't do, because I'm not, and I never intended to be, a full-time jazz musician. Mm. So yes, I could make a few comments musically among the eloquence of these great jazz artists, some of the greatest of all time. But I don't need to do that anymore. It's got to the point where I realized that, yes, that's an expression of my appreciation of what I can understand about what they're doing, but they're devoting their entire lives to that. And if they didn't do that, I would never hear that kind of thing, because I can't do that unless I devote my entire life to it. And even then, it's questionable whether
I would
be able to do
it. Yeah,
it's
like, would I have ever been able to dance like Merce Cunningham, even if I had decided to be that?
One thing that I've come to terms with, and that's that those people have given an incredible gift.
Yeah.
And I'm attempting in my limited way to give my gift. And all of it is, a built into all of it is that you have to become a devotee of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to let go a lot of the other stuff that you could be doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, great athletes, you know, Olympian athletes and figure skaters and musicians and things that they will often talk about, they felt they were missing out on all the stuff the other kids were doing in high school because they were launching a career. And it wouldn't have happened if they hadn't become a devotee of that form of expression or living that kind of life early on. So you really, the trade-off is the richness of going deep with one thing as opposed to getting to do all this, you know, getting to dabble in everything else that everybody else is doing.
Well, and there's different kinds of people too. I think some people, it's just their nature or their dharma or something to be on one track from from childhood, and that's just their natural devotees to one thing, whereas some of us, like myself, I could never do that. I mean, I've never in my life been able to be devoted to one thing for a long stretch of time because there's just too many things I'm devoted to. And that's good too, you know. It's like the world needs people of all of these sorts.
But when you take something on, you do justice to it, even though you might not devote your entire life to that.
Yeah.
I've noticed that you don't you're not a dilettante that just dabbles.
No, I completely plunge in for a period of time, and then suddenly it's something else. But, I mean, just like mentioning Gertrude Stein again, Gertrude Stein was more, you know, her awareness was very broad and touched a lot of different bases in life and all that, but her partner, Alice B. Toklas, was devoted to Gertrude Stein, and Gertrude Stein would not have been known to the public as she has been, gained fame and all that, if it hadn't been for Alice B. Toklas, who took on Gertrude's genius and brought it out to the world and helped get her works published and all the other things that she did for her. So
where's my Alice B. Toklas?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. We all need her.
I mean, there's this synergistic, symbiotic thing that happens between patrons and artists and supporters and in certain times it just all comes together. And that happened very much. We've been looking at Paris in the turn of the century through the 20s and 30s, some kind of huge kind of connectedness and symbiotic thing happened in Paris in terms of culture at that time that caused an explosion in arts. And it happened in Florence and happened in the Elizabethan period, and it happens here and there, happening probably Greenwich Village in New York and like that.
Well, and in our own lives, it happens from time to time, too. You know, we have our own little Paris cultural events, in a sense, happening.
Well,
you know, we'll be going along and doing sort of a similar thing, and then suddenly some swooping change comes into our lives, and we suddenly find ourselves going in an unexpected direction, and the big flurry of activity bubbles up and takes form.
Now, I wanted to say one thing back about this not enough time to do everything. One of the ways that has worked itself out for me that has been quite marvelous is I can think of one student in particular, but there's been a few students like this in my history as a teacher, but one in particular. I think as a teacher, everyone knows that as a teacher, I'm a general practitioner. I try to enliven in each of the students to fan that spark that's in there and have it grow bright and help them make it grow as shine as bright as it possibly can. But I have found one student that I'm working with now, and others more or less, whose personal taste and the groove they're on, the track they're on, is very similar to my own personal taste and the track I'm on as an artist. So what I saw there, the potential, and what has actually happened is I've been able to teach that person my techniques, my particular techniques. And the cool thing is that that person is now making things that I would have made if I had been allowed to continue doing what I was doing. But now I've become a curator and a teacher and am making, you know, the drawings that I'm doing. But this other track that I wasn't able to follow, this student is following. So it's really an interesting experience of multiplying myself in that way. Or in other words, that quality of intelligence, of the one intelligence that is creative and exploring the visual field and expression, went somewhere. I rode on that place for a while, but then I veered off over here, and I was able to like steer this other person along that track, and now I'm watching in that creative intelligence through them do it a little bit more, and it's really fulfilling.
Cool. Well, I'm going to circle back too to something we were talking about, because it suddenly dawned on me when we were talking about, or when I was talking about feeling frustrated because I couldn't do everything, that I realized that I was doing this one thing right now and I was missing out on everything else that was happening in the universe. But what I didn't actually think about then was there were huge amounts of things going on in the universe at that point that I had no interest at all in experiencing.
That's right.
I didn't want to be like sick in a hospital. I didn't want to be in the middle of a war, you know.
Be an astronaut.
Or even I didn't want to be a civil engineer or, you know, whatever. So it definitely was a selective kind of experience.
But isn't it marvelous that there are people who are that obsessive as you are about your things, about being an astronaut or being a civil engineer or being, you know, it's just...
That's actually fascinating to me. You know, when you read in the newspaper every year they have a thing about what the high school seniors, the like smartest high school seniors are going to do and major in college and what their goal in life is. It always astonishes me that there are so many people who want to be things that would have never have had an interest to me. You know, I want to be a medical technician, or I want to be, you know, whatever the direction they want to go in. And it's just marvelous that, like you said, that there are people.
Well, it's lucky for the progress of civilization, because if I was the one that was decided, we would be back painting rocks probably, because I wouldn't continue microbiology and nuclear science and medical
artists. Nothing but artists. Oh, they all starve to death very shortly. The end of that society.
I mean, it astonishes me too that people want to do things such as be a commercial airline pilot or a brain surgeon or things where you're actually taking somebody's life into your hands and it's your skill and expertise that is responsible for whether they live or die. It's just like, what an amazing person it must be who chooses to go into a career like that. It's mind-boggling to me that it wouldn't terrify anybody like it does me to think of doing that.
What an interesting side to this discussion is all of how ignorant I was of, you know, I accepted, you know, that basically the world would be delivered to me. I mean, I'm looking back at being a youth who takes for granted what you're given in terms of the comforts of society and the infrastructure of society and all of this. Because as an artist, I was really out in a place that was not helpful to maintaining that, which is what I just said. But it amazes me how ignorant I was of like how money worked and how finances worked and all of these things that actually were the structure of the society that was giving me the opportunity to be an artist, actually.
Yeah. It's interesting to think of the slightly different take on this dilemma. I have a problem with my own eclecticism too. I mean, I'm interested in too many things and there's no way I can pursue all of them. And maybe when I was young, when I was first noticing that I was interested in many things, I was troubled by the idea that I, in order to choose one of them, I would have to reject the others, certainly most of them. And yet, in spite of myself, I find that I have lived my life trying to pursue at least several of them. And even that is at the expense of pursuing one of them in much greater depth. And it is a dilemma. The problem is, if I simply allow myself to operate normally, as I seem to have been born to operate, that is, I find that I have to cycle from one thing to another. It's not that I'm afraid I'm leaving behind something. It's that after I have focused on one thing for a while, another thing will rise up in front of me and develop a tremendous, irresistible appeal, and I'll start working on that. And then after a while, something else will rise up. And I make a point of cycling back onto the ones that I've begun so that I can finish things, because I feel terrible if I don't finish something. That's what really makes me feel bad. Not that there are all these things that I could have done that I don't have time to do, but that there are things that I started and could have done a good job on and never finished them. So all the things that I've started, with few exceptions, are still high priorities for me to get them done. I don't have any particular sequence or, you know, priority among them, but I'm still kind of working on things that I did 10 years ago. And ideas that I had 25 years ago are still percolating, and some of them are just coming to fruition now. And in fact, I've just started writing a whole new section on my website based on ideas that I was kicking around without much success about 35 years ago. So it's a slightly different, you know, variation on that. It's one of just, you know, life presents me with these things that I find irresistibly enticing.
Yeah. Well, and it spirals.
And it cycles around.
Them. Yeah. And people, it's like people who are famous who do that, they get criticized by the public. Like Bob Dylan is one example. Picasso was another example, who would get known for something that the public loved, and then when they decided, okay, now I'm attracted to this, I want to try this, and everyone would get mad at them, you know, how could you do this, you know, and stop being the artist we knew you as, and what are you trying to prove? And luckily, they didn't listen to those criticisms, and they kept on pursuing all these different directions, because they couldn't just stay with one thing. And many times in those artists that we, after a long period of history and you look back on them, you see just what you were talking about, the spiraling around, where they've gone back to old ideas and now they're expressing them in some much richer form because new layers have been added onto them. And it's a wonderful kind of progress.
I think it's a pattern of all creative people. And that they can't stop going with the fascination where their attention takes them. So some people do it within a limited range, just like oil painting, you know, abstract oil painting, but that's how they move creatively. Mm-hmm. They will do a painting and then what will grow inside of themselves as they're doing that painting is maybe the opposite that they have to entertain. But in doing that, they grow as artists. And I think that this exploration thing is just part of the creative process. Yeah. Some people do it more within a limited framework, and other people do it with the larger picture. And
I admittedly haven't, you know, tried to pursue all of the things that I'm interested in. I only pursue the things that I can't help pursuing, which are, you know, maybe 5% or 10% of what I'm interested in.
But I think that the creative person does that and always does it. They can't not try out something that is too fascinating not to try out. So that even it goes against what they had decided they were doing.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I used to always decide that I, it was time to focus on one thing, do it really well. And 4 months later, I'd be focusing on a completely different thing because it just had to be done.
Because you can't
but
you, help
but
it.
Yeah. Just like with Donna, you, what you do, yeah. you completely sink in and get into it and do really wonderful things.
Well, and it's like you're always saying, Bill, that the whole process of being an artist is like being in love.
Right.
And I think that's true also for scientists, you know, who right. get impassioned about some particular... I remember reading in some article in Scientific American or something about some guy who got fascinated by a certain kind of ant who lived in the desert. And and this ant had a certain way of walking across the desert that was where he meandered like a river would, you mm-hmm. know, go back and forth. And he spent something like 12 years of his life studying this one kind of ant who walked across the desert. And although it was baffling to me why anybody would want to do that, the article was fairly riveting because you felt mm-hmm. in reading this article his passion and attraction to the marvelous, complex life of this ant and why he did the things that he did. So it's... can be anything.
How much time have we got? One minute.
It's that fateful last minute of the Icon Art Radio Show, where we can't just sit in silence, and we don't want to play an extra minute of our beloved theme song, so we need to fill the space with a little bit of further discussion.
And a minute is actually a pretty long time when we're
doing something like this. I'll tell you this.
Filling a minute is much more difficult than writing a minute.
The first 26 minutes was nothing.
So
it went real
see,
fast.
Every vantage point is valid, even this one we're talking about right now of how to fill a minute. Here we're talking about not having enough time to do all the things we want to do, and yet we're having difficulty filling
a
minute.
One
so
home.
That's irony for you.
Trying to fill it in context, of course. If I could just fill it, I'm sure I'd find something completely interesting to fill it with.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.